Welcome to The Weekly. I'm Jeremy.
I'm Chris.
And this week on The Weekly, Apple lawyers attack itch.io.
Yeah, I saw that.
A new edition of Age of Sigmar.
What? Okay.
And Games Workshop is abandoning Japan.
Oh, really?
Well, I have the evidence. I'm suspecting this. This is my conspiracy theory. There's been, of course, just like everything else, there's no official statement from Games Workshop. But I'm starting to suspect, and I wonder what this actually means.
Interesting. Okay.
So let's start with the Apple and Epic lawsuit. So Epic Games is suing Apple to get into their little walled garden and allowed the lawsuit is to allow Epic to sideload apps onto iPhones, basically, because Apple just only allows unless you jailbreak the phone, you're only allowed to load things from the Apple Store.
Interesting.
And the 30%, you know, they're saying 30% is not good, and we don't want to pay that. And they have allowed in other cases other companies to sideload and not really say anything. Because so basically the app just takes you to a website that then you register with a credit card. And so then the billing and the fees are all completely different because you're not downloading it
through Apple.
Right. So the subject of itch.io came up because the Epic Store on PC has an app that allows you to download download games onto your PC from itch.io.
Yeah, saw that,
And the term unspeakable games came up.
It's pretty funny,
So, so it offers indie games, an indie game storefront from itch.io as an app in the Epic Store. And Apple is trying to use this as a weapon against Epic and saying, you know, just trying to discredit Epic. And that's a little bit of a ridiculous stance, and we'll talk about why in a sec. But so-called adult games that were so offensive, we cannot speak about them here, was a statement that kept going into the record as the attorneys discussed. And, you know, attorneys, they are legally representing a company, but I hope, like, morally or spiritually or whatever, they're not representing, you know, Apple, because they say whatever they need to say to win a case. But it's pretty lousy. So Tim Sweeney, the CEO of Epic, is a little bit confused about what itch.io, I think, is, because in the announcement when the app went on the store, he said they have at least hundreds of games. Well, the real number is like 200,000. I think it changed a little. So maybe Epic doesn't even know what they're dealing with. But a game that did come up that is downloadable from itch.io is a game called Sisterly Lust that includes a list of fetishes, which includes many words that are not appropriate to speak in federal courts. So that's when the unspeakable game thing came up. And Apple has always had, since 2016, they always told developers things like, if you want to criticize a religion, write a book. If you want to describe sex, write a book or a song, or create a medical app. Don't, you know, make a game. You know, that they don't want, there's things that they have decided they don't want you to make apps about. And the judge is kind of paying attention to this, so this might not be great for for itch and Epic in this case. But the thing that's kind of objectionable that a lot of people are a little bit bothered by is, you know, Apple is going after a platform that's particularly favored by queer developers and offers depictions of sexuality you won't find in big budget mainstream games. And Apple has always been inclusive, and their CEO is, you know, he should be aware that this is making it look bad. They're attacking a queer platform, basically. And so that's why people are, not happy about this.
And that's why a number of unspeakable game jams
popped
up in response to that.
Right. So there, until July 12th, the unspeakable jam is one of the one of the jams running on itch. Just in response to this, I think developers are a little disgusted that this position they're taking in court, you know, just to get some leverage against Epic. I mean, it may not actually be the company's position, but the lawyers are putting this in a public record, and Apple, they're representing Apple. So there's online, there were some transcripts of kind of the discussion and how the attorney was wailing on the Epic kind of brand manager about this. And it's all just, you know, the same kind of legalese, but the unspeakable games. So we'll see how that goes. And I don't know whose side to even care about. I mean, Epic is disgusting and Chinese funded, and Apple should know better than to do this. I mean, I think they're hurting their brand a bit by putting this kind of public stuff in the record.
Yeah. I don't really have a side other than like other people have said it a lot better than I possibly could, but it's like a platform like itch needs to exist specifically because it can host that kind of content. So
Yeah, because a lot of you're going to get because even I think Steam has a hard time. They censor games a lot, and they've removed a lot of games, so it's not easy. Like they championed indie development a lot, but and Apple has always kind of done that ever since the early iPhone development. They've been very friendly to indie developers. So this is weird. Yep. This is so weird. I mean, not friendly financially,
right? Okay, yeah. But they put your money where your mouth is.
Yeah, they featured work, but they take a big cut. So
that's the thing. Like taking cuts. I guess that brings me up to the fact that Friday, I think U.S. time, but I couldn't tell you what time zone. Itch is doing its first like creator day where they're not taking their normal relatively small cut from any sales on Itch. So kind of like those Bandcamp Fridays, they're doing 100% of whatever you pay for a game on Itch is going directly to the creator. And it's probably for about like a period of 24 hours, but I couldn't tell you what time zone it starts in. So like if you have a game in a collection on Itch that you've been kind of waiting to buy, like now is the time to do it.
Yeah.
But I haven't, not being a really video game person, I haven't paid attention to the video game side of Itch or Steam or any of the kind of other stuff. But I don't know. I think being friendly to something, I mean, it's kind of like anything with like big corporations and capitalism. Like they kind of only care how much money they can get off you, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and once it stops being profitable or whatever, you're just like, go fend for yourself, right? I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. And it's, that's their image is just, to kind of differentiate themselves from Microsoft, basically. Yeah. So, we'll see. And this isn't, I don't think anybody is really rooting for either side of this.
No. I think at least in my little circles, what a few people were concerned about is, does this mean people are going to take like a bigger look at Itch? And like, is Itch going to start seeing like, not legal trouble, but just kind of like trouble? Are people going to like come in and try and start like censoring games or whatever?
Right. Or just like making it becomes a problematic link or it's censored, or you'll get like pop-ups that say this may contain offensive material.
That's what people are concerned about in my little spheres, which I would agree with.
Yeah, definitely. Well, have you recovered from the Warhammer Fest online yet?
I guess so, since I didn't know it existed. Yeah.
So over Golden Week, so it was actually like a week ago, but over Golden Week, Games Workshop had their Warhammer Fest, but they did it, of course, all online. Right. And an online fest is just scheduled streams. Yeah. And so it was just a bunch of announcements, but it's face-to-face kind of talking to developers. So it's not just flashy videos or press statements. It's actually the people that worked on the games, people work at the company kind of presenting stuff in a casual, kind of Zoom meeting way. So on the final day, they had a big surprise, and everyone was like, "Yes, Warhammer Fantasy is coming back, and I can't wait!" And so it's all speculation about what the last day's announcement was going to be. Big news, big news! They announced the third edition of Age of Sigmar.
Okay.
Yes,
as someone who spent far too much money in high school and early university on Games Workshop, worked at Games Workshop for a little bit, I've fallen off the bandwagon. How long has Age of Sigmar been out? Because it does not feel like that long. What, 5 years?
It's on a 2015 was the first edition release.
Okay.
They're kind of on a 3-year cycle.
Okay.
And I was really surprised when 9th edition Warhammer 40K was announced during the lockdown. I mean, they literally said, there's nobody in our warehouses to sell you anything. Here's 9th edition, and here's the Indomitus box set. And so they had production trouble with that.
Right.
That sold out immediately. And they're going to do this all over again? I mean, they're already having... So the transparency and kind of communication of Games Workshop has fallen off very seriously in the last couple of years. And they started to kind of, handle their social media a lot better and present things. And Warhammer community was kind of a way they would kind of tease things and like, here's what's coming, here's what's coming, get excited. And they've had a couple of huge stumbles recently and no word about what's causing this and why. And it may just be because they don't want shareholders to know. Right. They don't want to affect stock prices because they had they've had really good quarters during the pandemic. So they're trying to, and they've been on a weird kind of new release schedule. So every week there's been new releases, just constantly a lot of, Age of Sigmar boxed games and things. So they've been on this schedule, and Warhammer Fest, that was the first 2 weeks in years that they haven't had any new releases announced. And it seems like they do need to be playing catch up a little bit, because one of the big problems they had, this was related to Age of Sigmar, was the Warhammer Quest kind of follow-up, the next big game that came out was Cursed City.
Which I saw a lot of people talking about.
Yeah, and it was a mess.
Oh, really?
Okay. The game was only on sale in like Western countries for like 5 minutes, you know, and then it was sold out. There was no like Indominus. Then they said, whoa, this is more popular than we thought. Let's do a made to order kind of like you order it. We can't guarantee when we're going to produce it, but we'll eventually get it to you.
Right.
It disappeared from the website. And the funny thing is I'm still getting like promotional mail with a link showing that game. You click on it. It's just a 404 the site. So there was a casual Twitter announcement from somebody that said we never said it was going to be a permanent game. They did, but so it's very similar to Blackstone Fortress.
Okay.
It was a box game with a setting that was like a Warhammer Quest game, and they were going to add expansions to it to kind of give you a complete story and kind of add to it. And everyone thought that's what Cursed City was going to be. It just disappeared, and we don't know why. I mean, Brexit happened, the Suez Canal blockage happened. There's a lot of weird things that happened that you could point fingers at may have screwed up their supply chains, but nobody knows, and they're not talking.
They're not saying, right?
Yeah. So it's all speculation, and so now we have a third edition of Age of Sigmar, and it's going to come with a box. You know, they've announced it's going to have a box set, and so is that going to have? Because they've already had two big releases that they hyped, Indomitus and Cursed City, that they've totally fumbled on. Scalpers have just grabbed up. There was, interestingly enough, on Japanese Amazon, there were about a dozen copies of the English version of Cursed City that just sat there for a while. And I think because...
And you didn't buy one?
I didn't say that. But the price, though, of the Japanese, even the English edition of Cursed City is basically the scalper price. So if you go on eBay and you get someone that's doubled the price, that's what the Japanese price was. So it wasn't really saving anybody. You had to be really desperate, to do that because things are still floating.
Which is why you didn't say if you picked one up.
I didn't, but I did know that the store in Namba received two English copies.
Oh.
I do know that for a fact.
And now they only have one. Mysterious. <Yeah. laughs>
But now,
I don't know. Interesting. Like, I wonder if, but being charitable to Games Workshop, are big boxes like that the entry point to the hobby? And like, do they sell better than other stuff? Mm-hmm. And are they a way of kind of, onboarding people and saying, hey, here's a new one? And I don't know. Like, with anything with editions, if it's too quick between editions, you're kind of like, I kind of feel like I wasted my money.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. If you're also doing like tournament stuff, then you do have to address issues. And I mean, like, it's a lot easier when you have like a card game like Netrunner or something and be like, hey, here's a new banned list,
right?
Whereas with like a miniatures game, you're gonna be like, okay, well, now I can't use these miniatures, which is kind of why I fell off of War Machine a little bit.
So I'm not sure. And the boxes, they have done a good job with these kind of new edition boxes of giving you a really good, it's been a lot of push fit models,
right?
But it's been a really good way to get two decent sized forces with new rules. And they've been giving hardback. This was in the Soul Wars, a hardback copy of the 2.0 rules. So they've been doing a nice job of like, you're right up to date and you're kind of ready to go. You just have to, start buying the codexes, but usually they give you the mini kind of, at least the stat lines for everything. So it is, I think, an entry point. And the thing that's strange about Age of Sigmar is the lore is still kind of a mess. And it's kind of like, whatever. So they're promising, we're going to, things are going to start evolving and become more clear. And they're moving forward. So they're kind of introducing more new Stormcast Eternals. And the look of them so far is a little bit more kind of Greco-Roman inspired. Okay. So round shields and spears. And it's like, more of this. But so I don't know. And they're also talking about taking away the kind of ambiguity and interpretation problems with any of the rule set. Like, they're really trying to get it as playable and inflexible, or like, you can't confuse judgments as much as possible. So there's no details about the release, but this year. There's been no date, but they are talking about a core box like they did with second edition, the Soul Wars edition. And it's going to move ahead the storyline and kind of refine the rules. And we'll see. I don't know. Because it's still like way behind 40K. 40K is still their big.
40K has been around since early 80s.
Yeah, yeah. And so we'll see. We'll see what happens with this. I'm not sure. It's 3 years seems a little soon. I haven't played a single game of Second Edition in the 3 years that it was out. And I picked this up just, broken out of a box, right, like cheap on eBay because of the, I wanted to see the lore and a lot of what was going on just for kind of role play reasons.
Right.
So we'll see. We'll see how this continues things. And if it kind of moves forward, because now the thing, because I guess in the Second Edition, a Necroquake happened. And okay. So it's endangering the realms and death is kind of was a prominent faction. And now in Third Edition, they're going to do something where the reforging, where the Stormcast Eternals kind of like, reincarnated.
Right.
There's something that can prevent that from happening now.
Okay.
So make them more threatened or possibly more less immortal.
Well, I mean,
less eternal.
Yeah. I mean, if you did have like these immortal beings who can just keep getting reforged and reforged again, you're just like, seem kind of overpowered. Okay.
Right. So Second Edition was out, 2018, so they're on a three-year cycle, and I don't see the necessity to enforce this three-year cycle because people still can't get together and play, even though North American Games Workshop is saying in-person events are back on starting like the later half of this year, so they're going to try to push that pretty hard. But we'll see.
I wonder if you kind of have to, because, I mean, let's face it, GW is a physical miniatures company.
They got it, yeah. They got to keep
you can't
stuff.
Play with that on a tabletop.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's not saying there aren't hobby aspects that you can spend lonely time assembling miniatures and painting miniatures, but for the segment of the GW hobby that focuses on playing,
mm-hmm.
They've been out of luck for the pandemic. Not without very valid reasons, I'm sure GW is thinking about that.
And I think it's probably people's optimism and a lot of like extra free time or working from home that's made them like buy too many models.
It's free time from working at home. Anyway.
But, buying too many models and doing a lot of like, solo hobby stuff. And that's helped their bottom line. But I don't know if they need to keep pushing new editions when I don't think they all got all the kinks ironed out of the previous.
I guess maybe like we've been kind of talking about this a lot. But how do you do a cleanup of a rule set like that without doing a new edition? I mean, it would be what, Age of Sigmar 2.5?
Yeah.
Or do they want to put out like a PDF document that says, here's all your errata and rules changes? Mm-hmm. It's kind of, I mean, we experienced that a little bit with a little bit of that with like Netrunner and stuff. And I think it's just kind of, it's a stopgap.
Yeah, yeah. Well, kind of what they seem to be doing between the editions, too, is doing a big event. So they did this Broken Realms event, which kind of is the introduction of the big thing that's going to happen that kind of creates 3.0. Okay. So, they do that kind of thing. And that's a shame because that happened with me at the end of Warhammer Fantasy. That's why I was kind of like paying attention to first edition Age of Sigmar. It's because this really great stuff was happening. Amazing models were coming out. And then, the old world is just gone now. Yep.
Boom! Ragnarok. And now Age of Sigmar.
Now there's this. Everything's got a weird name and it's kind of similar, but not really. And
did we mention it because we can trademark that name?
Yeah. So their most recent, the big pre-order for this month was for the Soulblight Gravelords.
Okay.
So what fantasy faction do you think?
Death?
That's Vampire Lords.
Oh.
Yeah. But so the models are beautiful, very dynamic and amazing, but it's like Soulblight Gravelords. Okay, whatever, fine. So everything has got to get a new funny name. And speaking of Games Workshop, I don't think they are long for the Land of the Rising Sun. They may be abandoning us.
Really?
So what is my evidence?
Yes, I want to hear this.
So the first thing I noticed is Hobby Japan, so one of the biggest hobby magazines, monthly hobby magazines. As soon as the physical stores appeared in Japan and they were localizing the games heavily, like everything was being very localized, they were having a segment and they were introducing the new models and showing the assembled and painted models. And that was weird because I just seeing it's usually Gundam and plastic model kits. So everything is Japanese properties and some like licensed, Star Wars or Lord of the Rings model or statues and things. But this was amazing. So Games Workshop, and then some of the hobby magazines were releasing like special issues about games, like Citadel paints, and Games Workshop, the modeling on this like 28mm level wargaming. So it was introducing the hobby a lot and getting a lot of support. Probably because of some money passing hands. But that disappeared last year. And I was like, I liked kind of looking because the Japanese aesthetic and especially the painting aesthetic for Warhammer was very different and very interesting. And I'd like to check that out. That's gone. But I just heard that the translation group in England will no longer be producing the Japanese language version of White Dwarf.
Okay.
So Japanese White Dwarf is ending.
Oh, did it actually say it's ending?
It's ending.
Or yes. It's not being like pushed off to another group. It's just like...
No, it's ending. They're not okay. going to... I mean, unless there's a huge outcry, I mean, right. they may be. But as of now, the official, you know...
Japanese language, White Dwarf
is no longer being produced. Hmm. And so those couple of things were making me very worried about the future. I mean, will we still have physical shops? Because the...
Correct me if I'm wrong. Mm-hmm. We only had a physical GW shop, or one that I knew of, which is not the same thing, fairly recently.
Yeah, it's been about 5 years now.
Yeah,
yeah. So, those popped up. All the major cities in Japan got a Games Workshop. So it is a very new thing, and maybe like Burger King and Wendy's, they may say, "Let's cut our losses," and you can just online everything,
or do what we did before, where it's little like specialist game shops that are inside a little apartment on a complex. Yeah,
yeah. So we'll see if that happens, and we'll see if they're going to still take these big rule books and translate them. Mm. I mean, they're still doing it for German and Spanish and Italian. So I don't see why they wouldn't do it for Japanese. But
shipping?
White Dwarf is,
you realize you listed the Axis powers there. German, Italian. So why not for Japanese as well?
But they like their fantasy war games. What can I tell you? the recent price hike.
Okay,
so Japanese prices are not corresponding to any other region's prices. And they're getting more in line with Australia.
Right.
So they're just assuming everything is coming from very far. Nothing's going to be warehoused or stocked domestically. And so the prices have gotten insane. So that's why the Cursed City existed for so long here. And that's happened. And that was the other thing, that things that sold out immediately, like the Sisters of Battle Box and things, they sit on shelves in Japan. There's just not the demand for them. And so it's becoming very obvious that they're starting to kind of step back and say, this we might just make this online.
Total speculation here, but I wonder if that's because Japan already kind of has a large hobby thing that is basically kind of like Gundam or other kind of like plastic model kits, where, I mean, okay, this is just rampant speculation. You're also talking about a country where space to play a game is a huge premium compared to other countries. I mean, like, think about trying to get together to play a board game. I mean, like, you're looking at tables that are probably like largely this size.
Right.
So that limits what you can do. Mm-hmm. And if you're looking at like a big 4x6 table, that's what, like 3 tatami mats?
Mm-hmm.
And when your bedroom is like only 5?
Yes.
Where are you storing this? Or where are you playing a game? So, yeah.
No, that's very true. And I think we would have seen more in the kind of the hobby areas, we would have seen more shops open with the big 4x6 tables, you know, for people to play. Only one shop actually did that. So.
And they're out of business now, aren't they?
No, they're still
around. They're still around. Okay.
But the tables are empty every Saturday.
Oh, so, yeah. Because I knew, like, the one place I used to go to buy War Machine stuff, didn't buy 40K stuff. They had, like, 2 tables. But like you had to like squeeze past people to get into the place. They moved to like a larger location that was like huge. No, this is great. I went there a couple times to play War Machine games. And then after that, it was like you said, they're empty.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they have since moved to a different spot because I doubt they could pay the rent on that huge place.
Yeah.
And even the GW tables in the official GW shop down in Namba are...
They're tiny.
They're also empty every time I've stopped by.
Yeah.
So
I've seen a few... There have been a few weekends where it's kind of really... People are going nuts because they let you paint there and everything. Yeah. So if you don't have that kind of space at home, it gives it a chance to try all that out. But so I'm very suspicious. So it just seems like there's a lot of signs that it's just going to end. Things end real suddenly in Japan,
too.
They do. So I'm a little worried about that.
1 week, you're... hiking down to find a Wendy's, and the next you're like, wait, it's gone?
Yes.
Wow, that's a little bit loud. Sorry.
Oh, no.
So, just convey my disappointment at Wendy's disappearance from Japan.
So this combination of factors, this kind of like not really caring about another edition of Age of Sigmar and, being a little bit concerned that we may lose an actual physical store for, getting anything Games Workshop, and them not announcing anything about Warhammer Fantasy, made me look around a little bit online.
And?
And there's something that very interesting that happened during the lockdown, like in 2020 during the lockdown. So everyone kind of like they did their solo gaming. Right. There was something they did to kind of like mentally cope with what they were going through. And one of the things that's really kicked into high gear is support for the 2000, the War Master miniatures game that was done for. So War Master is 10mm Warhammer Fantasy Battles.
Oh, okay, right.
So this is a Rick Priestley system, and basically it's the same system he's now using for historical. And I think they did do historical. Okay. They like within Games Workshop, they did do historical, at least like army lists and things. I'm not sure about miniatures. And so he's moved to Warlord games, and so he the Black Powder system and Hail Caesar, and I think a lot of those systems are based on this Game Master system.
Okay.
And basically, it's so it's not quite epic. Epic is like 6mm. This is a little bit bigger, but it's still that kind of symbolic thing where the units represent hundreds of troops.
Right. You got like a stand of troops.
Yeah, you're kind of like abstractly representing these armies, but you know for position and everything. Yeah. And it's a lot based on a general giving orders to troops. And so what's fun about fantasy is some of your troops are stupid like giants and trolls, and they're like, "What? What did you say?" So there's more like unpredictable, like powerful units with unpredictable response. And so this has just kind of been taking off and nurtured by. So originally, the second edition, there was no second edition. Mm. They stopped publishing in like 2009, the official War Master. And War Master Revolution was this fan project that started out in the Czech, like kind of the Czech community of War Master. It said, "We're not going to let this die. We love playing this game." So they worked on War Master Revolution, which is basically the fan project 2.0. And so it supports everything because basically the original book gives you like a very core army list, but then they printed like gazettes and magazines that added, you know, Chaos Dwarves and Vampire Lords and everything extra.
You're not talking about like Death Blight Grave Lords or whatever.
And so that's the funny thing is that this move to Age of Sigmar and them moving away from those they're just kind of discarding, you know, dwarves and elves and, you know, so wood elves and dwarves and everything are just discarded. And so people are picking them up as far as artists.
Okay.
So what you're finding on and a lot of Patreon-backed artists is a lot of 3D artists that are producing STL files and some companies that are actually printing the files or producing them both in resin or metal, 10mm miniatures on little strips, you know, for this 10mm war game, like, you know, tactical war game. And so there's a lot of patrons with a lot of amazingly detailed, like 10mm stuff that is like a step above, because there's always like free models floating around. But the quality, it's very simple. It's people experimenting with 3D. So a lot of the free stuff is, you know, not amazing, but really talented people doing Patreons. And it's like they are obsessed that I'm going to do every army that's ever existed for this game. And the fun thing that they're doing is looks retro, like they're giving it like a nice retro style. They're not upgrading it because, you know, 10 millimeter you would have like hands and arms like the thickness of human hair. So, you know, to make them kind of chunky and so they look like old 90s stuff. And this has been something in historical that's been going on for a while, because when Rick Priestley moved to Warlord, they continued a lot of the historical Napoleonic and historical things. And a lot of British companies have done metal in different scales to support those games. So there's always third-party development. Right. But this is great because it's like a specific artist, it's a kind of or a group. It's probably like a sculptor and somebody kind of digitally optimizing them for printing and everything. But groups of people that are running these Patreons that are doing these like incredibly like, you know, the just really nice old school sculpts that really just like hit you right in the feels. Yeah, you're like, oh, this is great. So yeah, so I started and it gave me a reason to plug in the printer,
3D printer.
And actually see how these came out, and they come out amazingly well. And so I produced 2,000 point armies in a day. Like, it is insane.
How much space does each army take up?
And like nothing. I mean, they all the units fit in basically the, you know, what the size of an average shoebox, like just the base of that. Yeah, because they're really tiny, you know, the real tiny strips. And so the base, they're 33% like smaller than like a standard fantasy. So just think about, you know, how much of fantasy is on the table, and then like a third of that. And because of the photo resin. They're really light too.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So, and the other thing that worked out really well is, so everything is metric because of that scale. You can use metric, and the numbers don't get too big. And the nice thing is, in Japan, they make those pre-cut magnet sheets that are 20 by the
two. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Is a 20 by 20. So the bases are all 20 by 40. So you just take two of those magnet sheets and you can you just pre-cut everything out. Everything can stick down, and then it's heavy enough because a lot of people, they have bases you can print, and then they have spaces to put washers or pennies in the bases because they're just too light and they just fall over. But with the magnet sheet on the bottom, that's heavy enough to keep everything. And it's amazing. It's really amazing. So there's a couple of people. So I would recommend, if you want to take a look at what's going on, if you look for Forest Dragon. Forest Dragon has a Patreon, and there's a Facebook group for Warmaster and everything. Those sculpts are amazing. Mostly sticking with the kind of good side of things, elves and empire and everything. I mean the good not elves. Not destruction. Yeah, right. the not destruction-y part of things. And and also Ian M. Standing has a YouTube channel that goes through the rule sets and then does faction kind of spotlights on every faction that's available. And those are great. Those are really great videos if you want to kind of get up to speed. And what started all of this, I think, or what started like everybody saying, oh, I've been thinking that too, is Geek Gaming Scenics, like Luke APS on Geek Gaming Scenics did this video. And I saw the title of it, and he does a little clickbaity title sometimes, but I saw this title and I'm like, wait a minute, this might be good. And the title of the video was Make Warhammer Small.
Okay.
And his thinking was, you know, it's so to get into a large scale strategic game, it's very daunting.
Yep.
And he's a big Kings of War fan and just had the idea, well, we're stuck in this pandemic and I only can play with my brother. What if I just shrunk everything down, like cut all the rules in half and just printed things small? And so looked around to see what kind of fantasy models were out there and basically did Kings of War, like that you could just stick in a shoebox, you know, just with like minimal terrain and a couple of armies and just use the same rules, but just half everything to work very well. And but it's like, wait. Yeah, yeah. And so people have already been supporting this. Like this game exists. Like the fan-supported Warmaster has existed and people have been producing models for it. And they're getting close to just about everything exists. Like from some artist, someone has produced. Because people kind of specialize in like orcs and goblins or chaos or whatever. So, and certain artist styles fit better, certain things. But yeah, it's amazing. It's really, so I was really inspired, and it's something that gives you that old world fantasy back, and you don't have to worry about Edge of Sigmar, and it's a totally unenforceable, unlicensable. Games Workshop is not going to be able to do a thing about it.
Important fact, it also fits in a shoebox.
It is, yes, right. And so, yeah, so for Japan, it's like, that's amazing to be able to produce stuff of that size and so quickly, too.
Because
how fast that comes off a printer is amazing. So yeah, that's become a recent obsession.
So we're playing this one?
Yes. As soon as possible. Yeah. So that's kind of been, so if you're curious about why there hasn't been any unboxings or anything on the channel between the weeklies.
No boxes.
Yeah. I've been printing like crazy. So there'll probably be some tutorials and some 10 millimeter painting. Cause there's a lot of different things to consider on that scale. Like your sand has to be finer. Your flocking has to be smaller. Like you can't, use the same sort of materials you would use for your 28 because they're just be standing in tall weeds.
is that a sand grain or a boulder?
right. Yeah. So I'll put links to everything that was kind of inspiring for Warmaster. And I definitely want to give this a try. It's a great system. Like it's a really efficient system. And the army lists are based on Warhammer Fantasy Battles 6th edition.
Okay.
So pretty limited. And then as the editions came out, they added more. But because it ended in 2009,
there's not a lot.
It didn't go too far beyond. I think they did make it to ogres and
the Ogre Kingdoms.
Yeah.
Something like that. Yeah.
There's a little bit for everybody, and not just the factions, but the unit choices are much smaller. There is also, I didn't look into this as deeply because I really like the Warmaster rule set, but there is also Minihammer. And Minihammer is basically taking Warhammer down to 15 or 10 and then just using the standard rules.
Oh, wow, okay.
Shrinking everything.
So Minihammer
is
the opposite of Inquisitor. Because I've seen people scaling up their Sisters of Battle, especially to like 40 millimeter.
Right.
Which, that was the scale of Inquisitor. Yeah. Man, talk about a flop of a game.
That's right. So it would be. But that's the really cool thing about 3D printing. I mean, things that are designed specifically for 10 millimeter will look ridiculous at like 52 or whatever. But people are doing just generic things that you're basically given the 3D file and you can hack them up and, you know, do whatever you want to with them in a 3D program and to get them to print how you want them. So, yeah, you can scale up or scale down just about anything depending on the detail of the original sculpts. So that gives it so much flexibility. And this is kind of what I was waiting for and makes it a little less heartbreaking if we lose all of our physical gaming stores. Is I'll just then support games that are going to support 3D printing because, you can do some really amazing stuff. And the price and the quality of the photo resin, the FLA printer, are amazing.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So, it's a viable thing to do now. And the thing is, the resin is a little more fragile. You know, it's more fragile than metal, definitely much more fragile than the plastic cast that, traditional minis come in. But you can just print a new one.
So it's kind of like a step up from the paper minis.
Yeah, right.
It's like, this thing got damaged, whatever, I'll just print out a new one, whether it's paper or 3D printing.
So that's nice. And I think we're on the verge of something, and the reason so many artists are going after this and so many players are now interested in this, I think it's the beginning, and they better be paying attention to this or else the hobby's just going to get away from them because the kind of schizophrenic.
When is the lumbering behemoth of GW ever kind of like followed the trend, right?
Yeah, they're going to it's going to be an ugly thing when people, when they're just like, yeah, your rules, your miniatures are great, your rules suck, and your miniatures are so insanely expensive.
Yeah,
you can't even get them produced. You can't even get them out the door. So what are we waiting for? So that was kind of the happy thing that came out of all of this kind of, lockdown and ugly confusion and kind of like yearning for the more traditional Warhammer fantasy.
Right. Oh, cool.
It still lives on.
I look forward to playing.
Yeah. And it's a great community too, really supportive. So you see a lot of people, trying different things and just, supporting each other about how to paint stuff. So, cool. All right.
Cool.
So anything, did you bring something?
Oh, I brought something.
Yes.
Talk about. Something I've enjoyed on Itch, and no one can see it because it's also the print copy, is Apex Predator by Peach Garden Games. It's basically a solo game that uses cards and dice to kind of replicate or emulate Monster Hunter.
Nice. Oh, great.
So you fold out, not fold up, but you make a little 4x4 grid of cards or 5x5 or 6, and that's your little map that you walk through. And each card is kind of like a little oracle that says what kind of goes on. And sometimes you roll a die and you're trying to hunt a monster, and it's just like really stripped down and simple but enjoyable. And there's also rules for, okay, if you do defeat the monster, if you want to do a little campaign, here's your little bonus, or here's how it affects your character for the next quest you go on. So, because the whole thing of Monster Hunter is you fight monsters, you kill them, you make better stuff from their bits fight bigger ones, which is in this game. So
nice.
I was really enjoying it, and I thought it's pretty cool.
Excellent. So,
yeah. Okay. And if you're going to do Itch, remember, Friday is the 100%.
Creator.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, we'll put a link. Yeah, we'll put a link to just basically, and maybe your link on the
as well.
I think that's there every week.
It is, yeah.
But
cool.
Great. All right. So where can people find you?
Well, I guess on Itch or Twitter at HiveMind, HyveMynd.
Nice. All right. And so there'll be some more. So look for some kind of War Master coverage for this week. And if you'd like to support the weekly and what we're doing here, please visit patreon.com/upturntable. And you can follow us on Twitter and the website and everything. Everything is Upturntable.
Nice.
So, find us on all of those channels and
social medias.
Yes. So we'll be doing this again next week, and it's good to have you back.
Yeah,
back. It's nice.
No health problems. Yeah, all right.
Until one of us is hospitalized, we'll be back. Cool. All right. So, we'll be back next week. See you then.
Later, mortals.
Goodbye.